action, equal and opposite.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with our friend Senator Daylen Leach about the, again, you know, this whole voucher thing. Exactly how is this going to help the economy get forward? How is privatizing our children's future going to help the country? Not so much. What it's going to do is it's going to line the pockets of some politicos. It's going to line the pockets of some big investors. It's going to line the pockets of the very wealthy at the expense of all of us. That's why this SB1 fight is so important. And the amendment that was going on today, it's going to make it look nice and, oh, well, we're going to help the bottom. We're going to just help those poor few. What it is it's getting the foot in the door so that they can kick it off the hinges the next time around. So we'll talk to Senator Daylen Leach about that. Also in the second hour, Laura Clausen, Daily Co's labor page, going to be talking about all that is labor and especially infrastructure. This idea that our nation is crumbling underneath our feet. There are bridges that have been closed. There are structures that you look at that they're saying any time now could be that Minnesota moment, like with the I-35 bridge that collapsed into the Mississippi. Any day now. So we're waiting on that. Also in the second hour, United Mine Workers of America, their International Secretary Treasurer, Daniel Kane, going to be here to talk about their press conference today. They released their findings, a couple years after it happened on the disaster at the Upper Big Branch mine. Here's the thing. You know, those 29 miners, they're dead. Don Blankenship walks free. The guy I believe responsible, and I think a lot of other people do, too. We're going to talk to Daniel Kane about that. And maybe where do you go? How do you get these CEOs? How do you get these corporations who want to be people? How do you get them held accountable? Like I said, you want a corporation to be a human being? You want it to be a person? Let Rick Perry execute one. And this would be a good one to start with. In the third hour, Joshua Holland from Alternet, their senior writer and editor there over there at alternet.org. We're going to talk about the Occupy beatings that are going on around the country. In Oakland, they came out with tear gas and beanbag guns. While people are sleeping, they tear gas them. I mean, what does that say about our police departments in some of these areas? You look what's going on here in Harrisburg, and we were at this evening's General Assembly on the steps of the Capitol, and I hope more people come out and take an opportunity just to stand around and talk with folks. This is an excellent opportunity to come out, meet your friends, meet neighbors, meet people who you may not agree with, but have an honest dialogue, have a conversation. And, the Capitol Police here in Harrisburg have been very decent because they have a relationship. When we were in Wisconsin, the relationship was such where, you know what? The cops didn't want to go beating up pippies. They didn't want any trouble. Those are the things that have to happen. That's what we're going to talk about Joshua Holland about. But, this Saturday, is Occupy Your Capitol Day. So hopefully folks across the country will be showing up at their Capitol. Hopefully here in Harrisburg we'll get people to get out and show up and show their support. Also this Saturday with the Occupy Harrisburg group, they're having their Halloween party. Now, since the city canceled it, after all, broke, need the money, what has to happen is, you know, other people have to pick up the slack. And that's why what these Occupy folks have done. Because at the end of the day, it comes down to what we can afford given the revenue stream that we have. Since there's one entire political party hell-bent on feeding the elite class at the expense of the rest of us, and half of the other political party also hell-bent on feeding the political elites at the expense of our education, at the expense of our city and state needs, at the expense of public health and safety. You know, and it goes on and on and on. And how did we get into this mess? How did Harrisburg get into the mess it's in? Well, you know, pretty simple. Deindustrialization, for one. Tax rates that have not kept up. Investment in our infrastructure that has not kept up. And you look at today, Rick Perry came out with his grand tax scheme, which just dumb to me. I mean, there's absolutely nothing about that tax plan that shows me he has a bit of intelligence. So I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do both tax plans and I'm going to figure out which is cheaper and I'm going to go with that route. The whole idea of going with a flat tax, you have to understand the first component of it is to do away with the IRS and do away with, and maybe I'm giving out too much information to people like Rick Perry, but the reality was you were supposed to get rid of the IRS. That was the goal of the flat tax. By having both options, you have to keep the IRS. You have to keep the people looking at those other returns, and you're still going to set up a system where people are going to cheat and cheat and cheat and cheat. The idea of a flat tax is that it was simple. Very simplistic. There's no way to cheat it. It is what it is. But, you know, he kept a lot of the deductions in there, a lot of the charitable stuff, a lot of the housing stuff. You got to wonder what this guy is thinking. And I understand to a degree. Look, he's tanking in the polls. He's falling like a rock. And he needs something to out-simpleton the King Simpleton. So when Kane came out with the 999 plan, everybody goes, ooh, like that, 999. I'm going to pay 9% income tax and 9% sales tax. Think of all that money I'll be able to save. Not thinking that that 9% income tax, for a good majority of folks in this country, is an increase in your federal taxes. Not thinking that that 9% sales tax is on top of the state tax that you're already paying. Don't really go into that. And then when you dig into the meat of Kane's plan, that middle one, the 9% corporate tax, well, that's not really set in stone. That's kind of just, oh, well, if you go into an opportunity zone, it'll be zero. And then if you go into a quote-unquote opportunity zone, like any of the deindustrialized cities across this country, of which Harrisburg could be considered one of them, they set aside all those pesky laws. No more collective bargaining, no more unions, no more minimum wage, no more health and safety, none of that stuff. No more Fair Labor Standards Act, minimum wage out the window, you know, all that. It would be a conservative paradise where the true cost of labor could be exploited right here at home. We wouldn't need to go to places like China or Vietnam or, you know, any of those other places. We wouldn't need to go to anywhere. We could exploit people right here at home. And boy, wouldn't that make business happy? But you look at this plan that he's got, and it's amazing to me. And I think people right from the start, you read the headlines across the newspapers across the country, it's a scam, it's not going to work, poorly thought out. And that's pretty much been his entire campaign. Poorly thought out, poorly designed, and poorly executed. I mean, the guy really, he should have gotten Bush's handlers. Because I think he's probably dumber than Bush because he's not able to at least stick to the script. So it'll be interesting to see. Here on the state level, you know, with the everything going on across the state, across the country, you've got all this legislation being tossed around and stuff we're going to be talking about for some time. Last night we talked about Turd's Eyes, privatization of the liquor stores. You know, his personal favorite, you know, he had to get that out. That's a priority to him, you know, the guy who heads up the House, the guy who heads up the Senate, Joe Scarnati. He wants, you know, he wants an impact fee because up in his area, you know, they want that money coming into the local governments. It's a big boom for him. He doesn't want it coming here to Harrisburg. He doesn't want it divvied up across the state. He wants it kept in his backyard. Why? It's a political winner. Corbett, of course, he wants the school voucher things. He wants to continue his privatization tour, more charter schools, you know, more money going out to private investors, good stuff there. You got transportation bill that's on the top of some folks' legislative wish lists. And also this whole redrawing the legislative districts. This whole gerrymandering that is going to happen. And again, I wish they would take that out of the hands of the legislature and put it into the hands of a bipartisan commission. Actually, a nonpartisan commission where you're looking at how do you make competitive races, not how you gerrymander, groups of houses that are going to vote your way. Look, they've come down. If you don't think they know how each individual house votes in every district and how to just, you know, scalpel those lines, you need to wake up and smell the coffee because they've been doing it for generations now. What we need is a bipartisan commission to say, you know what, we're going to make competitive districts where ideas actually win and not political machines. But, you know, you go through this, the majority of the top priorities. Now, remember, these are the jobs people. These are the people who said, we're going to bring jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's our goal. That's the Republican Party's position as of 2010. We haven't seen that. We've seen gridlock. We've seen obstruction. We've seen delay. We've seen, you know, going after collective bargaining rights. We've seen going voter ID, same-sex marriage, abortion. We've seen everything but jobs. And you look at these top priorities here in the state legislature, the gas drilling fee. That's really not going to create that many jobs. It's going to enrich some local politicians. It's going to enrich some lobbyists. Going to do a good job at that. But not really a boom. You look at Turd's Eye. He wants to privatize the state stores. Let's hock those off for as cheap as we can get. Again, the numbers that they originally came out with, the $2 billion, not happening. The number of stores have doubled. And even in some cases gone up by five times. I don't think people want that. But again, not creating jobs. In fact, what that's going to do, going to cost some 3,000 to 3,200 jobs. Corbett's voucher thing, I don't see how you say that's going to create jobs. What it's going to do is going to steal money away from public education, causing more layoffs. The transportation bill, you can argue. And I'm with Jake Corman, the Republican from Senator Carney, on a lot of the things in this. We do need to get roads and bridges fixed. Not a big fan of P3s. Not a fan of the public-private partnerships. I don't want to spend my money to enrich private corporations to make their short-term game. I think if there's a bridge that needs to be built, we can do it. But if you look at all of these things, it's not about creating those jobs. It's about these little priorities that these guys have had all these years, and it's just been sitting on the shelves, and now, oh boy, we got the chance to do it. What we should be talking about, how do you create jobs? So yesterday I was at the Capitol, and there was a joint press conference. You had leaders of corporations. You had leaders of unions. They came together, and they started this joint partnership, if you will. And they're calling it the Pennsylvania Steel Alliance. And, you know, the idea of this steel alliance is to promote the steel industry. Show what an actual industrial base can do for our nation. Imagine what an industrial base here in Harrisburg would do for the city. It would be a nice tax base. Maybe we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. Granted, the political leaders made some dumb things, but this is the result of 30 years of giving away our manufacturing capacity. And the reality is the steel industry has been decimated. There's no more 100,000 people working for Bethlehem Steel. What you have now is you've got, in the entire state, according to the people at the Patriot News, the steel industry employs just over 12,000 people statewide. Now, if you consider for a second that the casino industry, somewhere around 15,000. But if you look at the difference in jobs, those 12,000 steel jobs, big, big money. These folks are making, on average, good money. I think the story said in the $70,000 range. Now, the state is saying the 45,000 in the private sector. That's what the state average worker in the private sector is making. The steel industry, 70 grand. Imagine what that $70,000 wage would do to help the local economy. So when we build a bridge, shouldn't we be promoting the idea of, oh, I don't know, using steel made here instead of shipping from China? Doesn't that seem smart to anyone? We've got this booming Marcellus Shale that they keep telling us is creating all these millions of jobs. I'm told 250 tons of steel are needed for one drilling site. There are almost 1,400 drilling sites. How much steel could we be producing? Those are the jobs we need to be working on. Where are the Republicans who were pushing for, oh, remember 2010? Jobs, jobs, jobs. Now it's just, let's privatize education. Let's privatize the liquor stores. Where's the job creation? It's nuts. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Republicans continue to stand with the Wall Street one percenters as Senate Republicans unanimously blocked President Obama's Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act. United Steelworkers President Leo Girard says the politicians in D.C. flipped the bird to the Occupy movement. If the majority really ruled America, Girard says, the jobs legislation would pass. Girard says Congress rejected bills that would create at least 1.9 million jobs while passing trade bills that help the wealthiest 1%. An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found 64% of Americans believe that Congress should pass Obama's jobs legislation. 64% say it's a good idea to raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations. Despite solid majority support for jobs legislation and taxing the rich more to pay for it, Republicans refuse to follow the will of the American people, choosing instead to continue to represent the 1%. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the senators who blocked the Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act are refusing to listen to the majority of Americans. Henry says these senators are siding with millionaires over the unemployed. National Nurses United and Occupy Chicago marched on Chicago City Hall Monday, protesting the arrests of two nurses along with 130 Occupy protesters over the weekend in Grant Park. Martise Chisholm is one of the nurses arrested for operating a medical first aid tent serving protesters.
We were denied our phone calls, and we were put in jail for speaking up for our rights, and that's un-American.
We here advocate for our patients and to advocate for Wall Street protesters. They have a right to be here, and they should be allowed to.
Police tore down the nurses' medical aid station and arrested scores of other protesters peaceably assembled to support the station. The other nurse arrested in Chicago is Jan Rodolfo. She says Mayor Rahm Emanuel should respect both the nurses' medical mission and the First Amendment rights of the Occupy Chicago protest.
Rahm Emanuel has the ability, as other mayors do across the country and have done, to respect the rights of protesters. If an encampment can exist on Wall Street, then an encampment can exist in the city of Chicago.
National Nurses United's Roseanne DeMauro says the arrests are disgraceful and won't stop nurses from continuing their medical first aid mission, setting up the Chicago station again, and continuing to support the protests. The AFT-affiliated Berkeley Federation of Teachers has successfully organized two Realm charter schools. Berkeley Federation of Teachers President Kathy Campbell.
We are a professional union. We know that our contracts and our actions affect students and their families. One of the things that really appealed to these charter school teachers, who are obviously deeply committed, really committed to their students and families, wanted collective voice through a union, but one that was very professional and very progressive.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America and by the National Education Association. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Because I've got a golden ticket.
I
with a golden chance to make my way. And with a golden ticket, it's a golden day.
I get it, the golden ticket, very good. Just like the voucher plan. The golden ticket. Very, very clever, Brett. Very nice job for you. Gold star and a gold ticket. Congratulations. Anyway, today in New York City, you had hundreds of activist students and teachers who went to a New York Department of Education planning meeting. You know, these meetings are where basically they've planned and conspired, both Democrats and Republicans, to steal public education away for decades, went unanswered. Well, today, the people showed up and they demanded answers. And guess what happened? The meeting was adjourned early. How dare you ask questions? So the folks there had their own meeting, marched out peacefully, and this is what happens when you get direct action. Anyway, today here in Pennsylvania, our tweet of the day comes from the ACLU-PA. Senator Williams says there are constitutional concerns. Let the court decide. They say, translation, we can ignore our oath to the Constitution. That's why I've asked State Senator Dalen Leach to come talk to us about what's going on with this SB1 and the theft of public education from children in this state. Senator Leach, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be with you, Rick.
So constitutional concerns, I guess Senator Williams thinks the court should decide that.
Well, I mean, and there is a place for the courts, but that's, in the first instance, we have taken an oath as legislators not to, you know, support anything that violates the Constitution. This voucher bill violates the Constitution in a number of ways. Keep in mind that, you know, people talk about, well, vouchers have been approved by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was considering the First Amendment, which is a, you know, vaguely worded part of the federal Constitution about the establishment of a religion. The Pennsylvania Constitution, which is a separate document, is much more specific in terms of its wording. It says, you cannot give money to sectarian schools that was meant for public education, and you cannot give money to sectarian schools at all without two-thirds of the vote of the legislature. And there's simply no way around that in terms of Senate Bill 1. So rather than engaging on the constitutional issue, they just say, well, that's for the courts to decide. But really, that's a shirking of our responsibility to be the first defenders, the first line of defense of the Constitution of Pennsylvania.
Now, here's my problem with the argument that let the courts decide. I don't know about you, but the state's in fiscal trouble. At least I'm being told we're broke. This seems like a very expensive exercise to fix a handful of schools that need help. Why don't we just fix those handful of schools?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we were doing under Governor Rendell. We put a lot more money in public schools, not everything he wanted because the Republicans controlled the Senate, so we always got half a loaf. But he always prioritized education, and we spent hundreds of millions of dollars, and we saw dramatic results. We saw, you know, a dramatic increase in the reading and math test scores, a 25% reduction in the gap between the richest and poorest schools, and Pennsylvania being named the most improved state in the nation in terms of public education. We are abandoning that effort, first with the $900 million cut in the budget to public education, and now with this voucher bill, which takes the poorest schools and basically abandons them. A lot of people, you know, I've been getting a lot of emails today, Rick, that are ginned up, you know, by the supporters of vouchers and a lot opposing it. But the ones I get supporting it, I write back and I say, you know, the voucher itself is not the problem so much as the funding mechanism, which takes the money dollar for dollar from the poorest kids in the state. And when people hear that, even the supporters of vouchers, overwhelmingly, they're like, whoa, wait, that was never explained to us. We don't support that. They think vouchers is being paid for out of the general fund, which is how most states pay for vouchers. Pennsylvania is unique. We would pay for it by taking the money dollar from dollar from poor kids in Pennsylvania. You and I would not be asked to pay a penny for those vouchers.
Interesting. But at the end of the day, that money that's coming out of the public schools that supposedly is and the way it's been explained to me, and help me if I'm wrong here, but the way it's been messaged is every child has a lump sum of money, and that money goes with them wherever they go, and that's how we're going to pay for charter schools.
Well, and part of it, and you know, it's vouchers, and that's the problem is that's a fiction taken by dividing the number of kids by the total number of dollars. The problem with that, of course, is that most costs are fixed. So when a kid leaves a school and takes $10,000 with them, the school needs $10,000 because that kid has left.
Right.
You have the same number of teachers, the same number of guidance counselors. You have to heat the school. You have to turn the lights on. You have to have a maintenance guy. So, I mean, none of that changes. If a lot of kids leave the school, if 100 kids leave, yeah, you could get rid of a couple teachers. You could get rid of some textbooks. You'll save some money, but not anything close to the amount that the kids take with them. And so what happens is the kids left behind, which everyone, even the strongest support, even Senator Williams concedes, will be over 90% of the kids. They're left behind with less money per kid in an already, underfunded situation to try to eke out an education. It's not fair. We're saving. What vouchers do is they give a nice benefit to a few kids at the expense of the vast majority of kids. And that's just simply not fair.
It's absolutely not fair. And, you know, I guess I would be okay with this down the road if we tried all other ideas first. For instance, you know, the funding mechanisms. I think it's insane how we fund public schools. I think it's insane that we have, 500 school districts in this state of 67 counties. I think maybe looking there, looking for savings in areas where you can consolidate stuff, that would be the first common sense starting position, not this.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And, you know, the one thing we could do is what we saw worked, which is adequately fund public schools.
Yep.
The schools we adequately fund do fine. The fact is, I mean, there's a reason that not one of the, quote, failing schools is in a wealthy neighborhood. 100% of them are in poor neighborhoods. So we have not funded those schools. It's not an accident, and it's not a coincidence. So if we tried actually putting resources in, making sure every kid had textbooks, every kid who needed it had tutoring, make sure there was decent guidance counselors and safety and security and good teachers, if we did all of those things, that's what works. There's nothing wrong with these kids. There's no reason these kids can't learn as well as the kids in the best public schools in the state, which are excellent. It's just that we're not giving them the best public schools in the state. We're giving them inadequately funded schools, and then we're blaming them because they haven't done as well in an inadequately funded school. And to punish them, we're taking their resources away.
Yeah, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, because here I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland in a very poor neighborhood. The reality is the school at that time was a place where people went for not only for education but also to be part of the community. What I've seen happen in areas, the schools, they get chained off at the end of the day. There's no more outreach to the community. There's no more part of that. And I wish there was a program for schools, and I'm sure there are some, but more of an outreach for the schools to get into the community and draw not only the kids in but also their parents. Because education should, to me, in areas that are failing, should be a family thing where you're pulling everybody in.
No, absolutely. That is not this approach. This approach is the exact opposite of this. And so, you know, it passed today in the committee. The Senate has never been our strong point. If this is going to be stopped, for your listeners out there, it has to be stopped by the House. Currently, there are not the votes in the House, but they're going to be under a lot of pressure from the governor and others to support this. So we need you to, you know, if I can implore people to contact their legislators, tell them to hang tough on this and not support this, because, I mean, this is going to be just tragic to thousands and thousands of kids across Pennsylvania.
Let's talk about the money for a second. You know, I'm looking at this employee income tax credit that they're talking about giving to these schools for, you know, scholarships and stuff. You know, I go, well, why can't we use that money to improve the public schools? Where's the money coming from pushing this agenda? Because, you know, I see all these ads on the radio, and I see all these ads on TV, and all these mailers I get from all of these different, you know, euphemistically sounding groups. If we've got money to do all that stuff, why don't we have money to fund education?
Well, yeah, there's very powerful national organizations behind this, funded by, you know, the DeVos family, which is the family that is the heir to the Amway fortune. Excuse me, the Koch brothers, you know, who we're familiar with in their activities in other areas. Very, very wealthy people who ideologically don't believe. You know, first of all, the idea that we should educate every child is relatively new historically.
Right.
You know, for many, many hundreds and thousands of years, you know, the elite got educated and the rest went to the farms or went to the factories. There's still people who have not bought into the idea that we're educating every child. And what, you know, there's a strong movement to get rid of public schools. and to, you know, basically go back to a time where if you have a child and you want to educate them, then educate them. Go pay for them to get an education somewhere. But, you know, there's certainly no public option to do that. And so, you know, the groups that ideologically believe this sort of thing are the ones who are funding this effort.
You know, as I've been saying, they're going to take us back to the good old days, back to the 90s. The 1890s.
Yeah, or 1790s.
Or either one. you know, take us back to the days where, just as you pointed out, there is no public education. It's a sad, sad thing. Let me ask you one more question before I let you go. You know, this whole thing of, you know, we're talking, the governor came out with his privatization commission. You know, not a matter of if we should privatize, but what we should privatize. You got Terzai saying, you know, hey, we need to hock off the liquor stores. We're hocking off education. Where's the job creation that we were told was going to happen in 2010?
It's nowhere. By the way, it's also state parks. It's also the turnpike. There's a lot of things. We should basically sell off all of our assets. But beyond that, there is no job creation. We're not only are we dealing with these fringe issues that you described, we're also trying to close down abortion clinics. We're trying to change, we're trying to disenfranchise voters. That's another thing at the top of the governor's agenda, this voter ID, which would literally disenfranchise about 600,000 to 700,000 voters in Pennsylvania. You know, things like that. It's all about an ideological agenda, which has nothing to do with job creation. Unemployment's gone up almost a full point since Governor Corbett came into office.
Yeah.
But we see no job creation legislation whatsoever.
All I see coming out of him is cuts to state and public workers.
Yeah, exactly. And then deal with all these fringe issues.
Let me ask you last question I've got for you. I don't know if you've seen them on the steps of the Capitol, but the folks of Occupy Harrisburg, they're looking for folks to support them all across the state. We've seen, we were in Philadelphia for that. What do you think of what's going on there?
Well, I mean, I've passed them by. I've not actually, spoken or anything at their thing. They were there tonight. There was a thing tonight. It varies from like 3 or 4 people to 100 people at a given time. And, it's good. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with everything that everyone at that rally is espousing. I don't know everything that everyone's espousing, but certainly it's good to see people being active. And I'm surprised the people on the right only liked it when it was the Tea Party. Suddenly when it was people they didn't agree with getting active, that was a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that it dwindles down to 3 or 4 people, they have jobs.
Yeah, and it gets cold at night.
And they have jobs.
They have
families that they need to take care of, which, is really not the messaging that we're getting from the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media who's saying, oh, they're just a bunch of dirty hippies and, a bunch of anarchists, which, you expect from them.
No, I've seen no evidence of anarchists and hippies at all. These are politically active people. Again, I may agree with them on some stuff, disagree with some of them on some things, but, they're doing the patriotic thing, getting out there letting their voices be heard.
Absolutely. Senator Leach, always great talking with you. Thanks for taking time for us.
See you soon.
All righty. Going to take a quick break right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Astonishingly, some Wall Streeters continue to be clueless about what the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. Yoo-hoo, Streeters, note that the movement's name has the term Wall Street in it. While there's a plethora of particular issues being raised by the protesters, the unifying theme is a protest against the rising tide of economic inequality that's enriching the most privileged few by knocking down America's workaday majority. And guess who is the most powerful perpetrators of this greed-fueled disparity? Yes, Wall Street. For example, even as the protest was spreading in mid-October to hundreds of cities, executives at Bank of America announced 3 moves. 1, to goose up their own extravagant pay, they're socking financially stressed debit card users with a new $5 a month fee. 2, they're dumping 30,000 of the bank's worker bees onto America's already swollen unemployment rolls. Goodbye and good luck finding another job. Third, two top executives who are departing the bank are being handed golden parachutes totaling $11 million. In the midst of this, Steve Bartlett opened his mouth. A former Congress critter who's now Wall Street's top Washington lobbyist, he is a perfect symbol of the infuriating corrupt coziness between financial elites and lawmakers. Yet, Bartlett blithely says that, quote, "We don't see ourselves as the target of the protests." After all, he explains, Wall Street has to be well-capitalized and well-financed for the economy to recover. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Golly, Steve, what part of the public's multi-trillion dollar bailout of the street's elite did you not see? We the people see every glaring dime of it. And we also see that rather than helping our economy recover, you're now lobbying in Congress to kill Wall Street reforms so banksters can grab even more at our expense." What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast at our website, or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and you can take the class war on the go. Also, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So, the Congressional Budget Office came out with a new report today. The thing I love about what's going on with the occupations is we've really changed the focus of the discussion in this country, and income inequality is something that people are now actually talking about. The news has to talk about, because now you're seeing people who have been affected by it. You are seeing the classes of people coming out in the streets, something I've been begging and pleading for years now. But anyway, the CBO came up with this new report talking about the growth in income for the very wealthy and the lack of for everybody else. In fact, the CBO found, quote, for the 1% of the population with the highest income, average real after-tax income grew by 275% between the years of 1979 and 2007. Those of you folk at the bottom, well, it just grew by 18% for the folks in the bottom 20% of the income scale. And they say as a result of that uneven income growth, the distribution of after-tax household income in the United States was substantially more unequal in 2007 than it was in 1979. And for me, it's the tax code. And it's something I've been talking about for some time. This handing off of tax dollars to the very wealthy, incentivizing things, and then it always being there. These loopholes that we lead, all of this, this handing out to the very wealthy. What happens? Well, they take advantage of it and they hold on to the cash, man. They invest overseas, do whatever. So I got to watch this. I don't know how many people have ever heard of the TED Talk conventions. It's technology, entertainment, and design is the TED thing. So they have these little speeches. People come out and they talk about it. And they had this guy from a professor from the University of Nottingham, a guy named Richard Wilkinson. He was talking about income inequality, talking about the economic inequality associated with people's health and you know, basic values of your society. How do you trust people? How healthy are you? Things like that. And what he found, when you look at a country's economic prosperity and things like their average lifespan, there's really nothing, there's no correlation. But if you look in terms of income inequality and that gulf between those who have and those who don't, you can then start to see all of the negatives of a society coming out. You know, if you have massive wealth inequality, do you have more people who are sick? Is there a health crisis going on? Do you have higher crime rates? Are there more people affected than just the poor people? And he went through a series of graphs that were just, you know, just mind-blowing. And if you got a time, look up Professor Richard Wilkinson. And, you know, it's a real quick video. It's about 10 minutes. And, he talks about this stuff. And if you look at the average income numbers, this income per head, life expectancy, you know, for the rich and the poor countries, you really don't see the difference, like I said. But once you start looking at that gulf and understand countries like Singapore, the United States, Portugal, the most unequal societies on this planet. And then you put that with all of the negative stuff, infant mortality, life expectancy, literacy rates, homicide rates, imprisonment, all of that stuff. You see that the more unequal societies have larger amounts of the negative stuff, while the more equal societies, places like Japan, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, all have less. They have longer lifespans. They have lower infant mortality rates. They have better education rates. They have better outcomes, and generally a higher standard of living as a whole, not just for their elite class. And you know, we like to think that we're the greatest place in the world. The guy made a joke. You know, he said if you want to live the American dream, you better live in Denmark. Because you have the ability for social mobility. And we see reports every day now where my kids are not going to do as well as I have. And then the kids who are getting out of college today, not going to do as well as their parents. And it doesn't have to be that way. And one of the things he brought up, and he was saying, you know, no matter how you get there, you have to have a more equal society. We have to do what we did after the Great Depression. And I like Paul Krugman's, I like his phraseology. We had the Great Compression. You know, we came out of the Great Depression into the Great Compression, where the billionaire class was compressed down with the rest of us. The problem is we don't see the billionaire class. They ride around in their chauffeur-driven limousines. They fly on private jets. They live on their private islands, gated communities. We don't see the opulence. We don't see the gluttony, the greed. We just don't see it. It's not in front of us. What we do see, we see that welfare mother who's struggling to get by. We see the welfare mother in front of us with the WIC card and go, "How dare you? I got to support my family. You should too." How many times have I heard people talk? If I had a dime, for every time I have heard the story, well, you know, there was a woman in there with a WIC card. She was buying beer. Or she was buying cigarettes with a WIC card. And you know, you're full of it. But, you know, the story keeps going on and on and on. Because I guess we're easier to pick on the people behind us than the people in front of us. But if you look at this guy's speech, and I hope folks will, his name, again, is Professor Richard Wilkinson. He's a professor at the University of Nottingham. And it's like 12 or 13 minutes. And I think it's well worth going into looking at. Because he goes, you know, if you bring that together, you have a society that moves forward together, not only for the poor, but also for the rich. Because he said, you know, the super rich are doing fine. The super rich are off the charts. But what about that step down and that next step down and that next step down? And he goes through and he shows these graphs that are just, you know, you can't deny the data. Now, some people say, oh, you're cherry picky. No, no. Took societies that were extremely unequal and then graphed them. And it's right there. And the U.S. is off the charts, especially when it comes to violence, when it comes to imprisonment, when it comes to teen birth rates. We're off the charts. We're in a world of our own. Maybe not the most unequal society. Singapore has that total. But we're in a league of our own in the negative things. And then he broke it down into the 50 states. And what's really, really amazing, and as I'm looking at his chart and how he plotted the graph there for the 50 states, what caught my eye immediately, because I'm a union guy, I'm going to be the first to tell you that, the right-to-work states were the most unequal states. The states that had the high union density were the lower end of the scale, the states that were more equal. And I've said for the longest time, the answer to our problems, and I'm hoping the folks at the Occupies across the country come to the realization that The only way you're going to have any social justice, the only way you're going to have any political justice is if you have economic justice. If you have a fair share of the pie, a fair share of the wealth that you're creating. It's that simple. And I'm hoping that, you know, this idea of bringing those jaws back together and closing off this income inequality stuff will make us a better society. And the more I think about it, you know, the guy's right on. You stop and think about the more unequal societies with harsher prison sentences and putting their people through insane exercises like urine tests to get welfare like they were doing in Florida. Found a whopping 2%, though. Got those 2%. And fortunately, on Monday, a judge in Florida said, "Yeah, you know what? No more. We're gonna stop this." They put an injunction out. No more drug testing for a while. So we're gonna see where this takes us. But at the end of the day, what I'm just thrilled to death with the Occupy stuff is that we're talking about things that Jake, we've been talking on this program I've been doing it over 6 years about the income inequality, about all of the negatives in our society, and it's now getting play.
Well, we're talking about a lot of things that the labor movement has been pushing for a long time, and we've been part of the solution for a long time. We've allowed millions and millions of Americans to ascend into the middle class. If you look at what happened at the Great Depression, you're right. The author you're talking about, the famous author, he has it right. There was a compression. Those who were in poverty, some of them were able, because they got better jobs, to step up. And maybe they were only in the lower middle class, but they were in the middle class. Those in the lower middle class went to the epicenter of the middle class, and the wealthy didn't control a little bit less and a little bit less of the total wealth. And there were more people sharing in it. And in the end, it was a more just society. It was a better society. Now we're going the opposite way.
Yep. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Does it matter? Does this inequality matter? And how do we close the gap? Do we do it with the tax code? Do we do it with stronger unions? Do we do it with pitchforks? Right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Making the blue blood see red.
The Rick Smith Show.
Someone tell the GOP that Ohio's not for sale.
Don't sell us out!
Three, two, one, go!
Hey,
looks like, and the polling from Quinnipiac says, you know, this SB5 thing, well, you know, it could be getting shot down. Because what's going on is people are waking up to the reality that this stuff could have happened at the bargaining table. People could have sat down and adults had the conversation on how we solve our problems instead of just trying to impose them like Scott Walker did in Wisconsin. And you look at what's going on in Ohio. We're hoping to be out there for Election Day in Ohio for the SB5 fight. You know, it's something that gets me. But I was looking at this article from the Times Leader up in Scranton way. And a Supreme Court decision just came down, a 6-1 decision last Wednesday, that the city can't be using this distress status to hold off the implementation of collective bargaining agreements. This is a huge thing. Now, the union, after years, won this battle. Because Scranton went into Act 47, they thought they could go and, you know, act like a bankruptcy court and just say, well, we're going to get rid of all those union contracts, and we're going to impose these wage freezes, and we're going to do all this stuff. Well, you know, they took them to court and they said, not so fast at all. And, you know, again, this is where these judicial races are so important. And one of the guys, this Michael Eakin, who I think is up for retention, he said in his opinion, in Pennsylvania, our first responders have their ability to strike replaced by arbitration. The reasons for this are manifest, and arbitration has generally proved a workable solution. He says, however, if Act 47 were allowed to eliminate meaningful arbitration, unilaterally and permanently eviscerating the ability of workers to adjudicate legitimate issues, the consequences on many levels would not be acceptable. And you look at the reality is, now, what I'm saying is going to happen. Legislatively, we may see the legislature coming out and saying, well, we need to do what Ohio's doing, which is why I think it's important for everybody to pay attention what the citizens of Ohio are doing at the beginning of November. Getting to the polls and voting down, which is why we've got to vote these people out. We don't have the ability to vote down legislation. We have the ability to vote out legislators. Use your right to term limits and throw the bums out. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Stosh on line one. How you doing tonight, Stosh?
All right, Rick. How you doing today?
I am great and getting better every day.
All right. You just asked the question, how do we solve this problem?
Hit me with it.
It's going to be a hard pill to swallow. But first of all, we're doing the right thing by taking our money out of these bank institutions who are trying to foreclose the country and use the money against us. Now, this is the hard part. We have to stop buying things that are not made in America. That's a hard pill to swallow because everything you see around us is made elsewhere. We have to take a stand for buying American. We got enough stuff here already from other countries. We just have to stop bringing the new stuff in and use what we have and start making stuff here in America and start buying American.
I'm right there with you. Stop going to Wally World and Target, where all they've got is the same cheap plastic crap made in China, and start going to local merchants who are going to start looking for those products made here in the U.S. You may pay a penny or two more, but you know what? That job you may save could quite possibly be your own. With you. I think it's a great idea, Stosh.
It's a hard pill to swallow, and trying to get people to stop buying European, well, not so much European.
I have a problem with European.
Yeah, it's you know, we got to keep reminding them we're in this problem because we stopped buying American.
Yep, I'm right there with you. On every level, you know, you look at, we talked a little bit ago about the steel industry. You know, if all the bridges that we were building were made with Pennsylvania steel, all the 5,000-plus deficient bridges in this state, if we said we're going to use Pennsylvania steel, you think we'd build a steel industry in the state? You're damn right we would be.
Yeah, well, we can demand that. Can't we demand that to happen like that?
Yeah, we can, but here's the thing. What we've got is a bunch of right-wingers running our state government. We got a bunch of people saying, hey, Stosh, you're a consumer first. Don't you want the best deal, Stosh? You know, the best deal is that cheap plastic junk you get from China because it's cheaper, right?
I don't want cheap stuff. I want stuff that's going to last.
There you go.
I got an old car that's 17 years old, and it's lasting. It has some minor problems, but hey, it's an American-made car.
That's what people need to hear, brother. That's the good word. Thanks so much. Right. I appreciate it.
All right, Rick.
And, you know, he's spot on. And, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, and it needs to be talked about more often. You want to create jobs in this state, in this country? Consume local. You tired of genetically modified food? Find a local farmer. Find a co-op. I know there's a couple of them out in Shippensburg where you can pay the farmer a couple hundred bucks, and he gives you whatever bounty he comes up with. Smart ideas. There are so many options out there. Don't stop going to Wally World. I haven't been to Wally World in years. Start looking at where your jeans are made. Start looking at where your tennis shoes are made. You know, I've got 6 pair of American-made tennis shoes in my closet because I don't know if they're going to be around because not enough people buy them. And there's only one brand that does, and that's New Balance that I know of.
That's what I am. I am appalled, Rick, at how lazy we've become as a society. You talk to people. When they say the word Walmart, I cringe. Oh, I like to go to Walmart because it's convenient. I don't have the time to hunt for America. You know what? If you care about your future, if you care about the future of your children, the future of this country, take the time. You can do it. You can do it, and once you start doing it, it becomes easier. You can come to your union. You can go to various sources where to find it. But every American can vote with their pocketbook, but we have become lazy and complacent as a society, and it has to end.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The reason I brought up the story up in Scranton about the Supreme Court is, look, our way forward, our way to change things, the way to close those alligator jaws to make us a more equal society, a more egalitarian society, if you will, is you allow workers to have their rights to collective bargaining. You allow people to have their rights to have a say in what's theirs. And look, you know, at the end of the day, if it's not there, it's not there. And had the mayor of Scranton, who I like Chris Doherty, seems like a decent guy. We've met him a number of times when he was running for governor. Seemed all right to me. He wanted to impose his rule. He wanted to impose a contract instead of sitting down and saying, this is what's available. There's no more. This is it. And having an honest discussion. And what I find amazing, and I was, how many people have heard of Billy Cunningham? The right, rabid right winger. I gotta play this clip because this is just.
He's from Ohio, I believe.
Yeah, Cincinnati, real right wing, way out, talking about SB5. I mean, it's almost that you can't believe that a right winger is saying this. It's one of those things that just.
By Billy Cunningham, the great American, on Senate Bill 5, which has been codified in State Issue Number 2. Many months ago, right there sat the governor of Ohio, John Kasich. And John Kasich told me, the rock rib Republican conservative governor of this state, that he would not meet with the labor unions. He was wrong in not meeting with state employees, especially those in labor unions. From my perspective, those affected by governmental decisions need to have a place at the bargaining table to determine the outcome of what's being discussed. I urge you to vote no on State Issue 2. The best Americans I know are cops, firefighters, and teachers. They're reasonable and they're good people. I urge you to vote no on State Issue 2.
Can you believe a Rush Limbaugh disciple would say that?
He said on TV tonight, I saw him. In fact, the irony is just before I left. He said that this
what's
is the bad
what's
part.
Ironic about that?
Well, it's ironic that I was watching it on national TV. Now we're talking about it. The point is this. He said 70% of the bill he agrees with. He said 70% of it is good. He said this governor has gone even farther than what they've done in Wisconsin.
But here again, there was an opportunity to sit down and discuss, just like here. And for me, at the end of this, what it comes down to is having that ability. And they want to take it away. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, going to talk about the good labor stories across the country with our friend Laura Clausen from the Daily Kos labor page. Right back after this. Stick around.
You're listening The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Republicans continue to stand with the Wall Street one percenters as Senate Republicans unanimously blocked President Obama's Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act. United Steelworkers President Leo Girard says the politicians in D.C. flipped the bird to the Occupy movement. If the majority really ruled America, Girard says, the jobs legislation would pass. Girard says Congress rejected bills that would create at least 1.9 million jobs while passing trade bills that help the wealthiest 1%. An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found 64% of Americans believe that Congress should pass Obama's jobs legislation. 64% say it's a good idea to raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations. Despite solid majority support for jobs legislation and taxing the rich more to pay for it, Republicans refuse to follow the will of the American people, choosing instead to continue to represent the 1%. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the senators who blocked the Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act are refusing to listen to the majority of Americans. Henry says these senators are siding with millionaires over the unemployed. National Nurses United and Occupy Chicago marched on Chicago City Hall Monday, protesting the arrests of two nurses along with 130 Occupy protesters over the weekend in Grant Park. Martise Chisholm is one of the nurses arrested for operating a medical first aid tent serving protesters.
We were denied our phone calls, and we were put in jail for speaking up for our rights, and that's un-American.
We here advocate for our patients and to advocate for Wall Street protesters. They have a right to be here, and they should be allowed to.
Police tore down the nurses' medical aid station and arrested scores of other protesters peaceably assembled to support the station. The other nurse arrested in Chicago is Jan Rodolfo. She says Mayor Rahm Emanuel should respect both the nurses' medical mission and the First Amendment rights of the Occupy Chicago protest.
Rahm Emanuel has the ability, as other mayors do across the country and have done, to respect the rights of protesters. If an encampment can exist on Wall Street, then an encampment can exist in the city of Chicago.
National Nurses United's Roseanne DeMauro says the arrests are disgraceful and won't stop nurses from continuing their medical first aid mission, setting up the Chicago station again, and continuing to support the protests. The AFT-affiliated Berkeley Federation of Teachers has successfully organized two Realm charter schools. Berkeley Federation of Teachers President Kathy Campbell.
We are a professional union. We know that our contracts and our actions affect students and their families. One of the things that really appealed to these charter school teachers, who are obviously deeply committed, really committed to their students and families, wanted collective voice through a union, but one that was very professional and very progressive.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America and by the National Education Association. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's a fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Got a question, comment, something on your mind, you can also email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So you look at Ohio, this Quinnipiac poll out, 57% support repealing SB5, only 32% think that it should be kept. And you look at the reality in all of this, the support for repeal is going up, up, and up. Now, they did come out. They did get a bunch of people to sign on to the petition to get it on the ballot. But the more people are talking about what effects it's going to have to not only the public sector workers, but to all workers in the state of Ohio. And really, we should be focusing on this here in Pennsylvania because it could be coming home very soon. That's why we've got to talk about this stuff and keep it front and center. That's why I've asked Laura Clausen, the super writer over there at the Daily Co's labor page, does a fantastic job. Laura, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this 57-32 Quinnipiac poll, and you know, there is hope, I think, for labor and the ability for folks to begin that education process with people who may never join a union, because look, 57%, those aren't all union members. I wish they were, but they're not.
Absolutely. And, you know, you see in the poll when it breaks it down, one of the things that people think is really important is just purely that collective bargaining right. You know, that is a right that Americans believe in when they think about it.
Yeah, I mean, why do I want the government between me and my employer? Why do I want a law between me and my employer saying you can't come to an agreement? I mean, that's what just blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, libertarians should be totally against right-to-work laws because they are the government explicitly limiting the relationship between the employer and the worker.
So I guess Mitt Romney was in Ohio, was it today, where he kind of snubbed the SB5 thing? And I guess, you know, he kind of said, you know, I guess I can see his point. I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'm not going to jump in. How was it taken in Ohio?
I mean, it seems like people are just really confused by Mitt Romney, as usual, where, you know, he shows up at a Republican phone bank, says, I support what you're doing here, but I'm not going to take a position on the thing that you're doing here.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing, but I support it.
Right, because you're Republicans and I want your votes.
I mean, you look at the class, you know, the 2012 clown class of the Republican presidential nominees, and I got to be honest, there isn't a rational voice among them.
No, there's really not. Even the ones who are supposed to be, you know, Mr. Responsible Moderate like John Huntsman are still pretty much out there.
I mean, you know, when Pat Robertson says the field is too extreme, you know you got a problem.
That is very extreme.
When Mr. God is punishing us because of those gay people that I don't know, when he says you're too extreme, you got a real problem. But, you know, I look at this and, you know, I look at Karl Rove, who I think is a political genius. I may not like Turd Blossom's positions, but, you know, I think he's a smart wordsmith. I think he's smart. The way I guess we're going to destroy jobs in the country is to kind of change the wording, if I'm getting this right, because he knows people want infrastructure improvements. He knows people are in big favor of building roads and bridges. How's he going to destroy that?
It's not just roads and bridges. It's also people are in favor of funding, you know, teachers and firefighters and cops when you ask them that. But again, if you just frame it all as it's going to unions, not even to union workers, just like it's a gimme handover to the union.
We're bailing them out.
Right. You know, not thinking about the individual workers who are your neighbors who are doing that work and then spending their money in your businesses and supporting your communities.
You know what's interesting to me, Laura, and I think the right has done a masterful job not only of divorcing citizens from their government. Their government is now some evil entity outside of them, but also workers from their unions. It's no longer our union collectively. It's the union. It's this evil entity that they've really done a nice job of demonizing. And I wish more people would push back on that concept of the evil union. Say, wait a minute, the most democratic organization in the country. I think we should be talking about that.
Absolutely, and you know, it's about demonizing the union and then demonizing specific kinds of union workers. So we've seen them go out after teachers and after all these different kinds of auto workers, too greedy because they have health care.
How dare they?
Yeah, and, you know, it's anything to get you to not think about your neighbor or your kid's teacher, to think about people as abstractions.
You know, I look at the whole... I go back to 9/11 and, you know, how everybody wanted to get their picture taken with a cop. Everybody wanted to get their picture taken with a fireman, and they all had NYPD hats, and they all had the you know, NYPD fire or the NY fire department. I mean, we just loved them. They just loved them to death when they were rushing into a building that was collapsing and just heroes. But paying them so that they can support their families, we're not going that far.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you even saw it with those specific first responders after 9/11 when they didn't get the kind of medical support that they needed. I mean, it's not even just a, like, abstract thing. It's those heroes who we all talked about and raised up and then just the government sort of tossed them aside.
You mean those people who were gaming the system?
Right.
Those greedy people who just, they just want to enrich themselves. Yeah, you know,
their $20,000 a year pensions that we need to cut.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, we've met a couple of those people who are now suffering from severe breathing problems and lung disorders because of the dust and the asbestos and all the stuff that the fumes that they were breathing in because the woman who was the head of the EPA at the time, Christy Todd Whitman, put up a nice little light system around Ground Zero. And when the lights were on, that meant you had to don your respirators because the air quality was poor. And you know those lights never went on? So all those workers down there on the pile, they didn't use those respirators. They used little paper dust filters. And what's that going to do for the toxic fumes that were coming off that pile? Nothing.
Nothing. And then, deny their attempts to get any support for the disabilities they had afterwards.
It's just absolutely nuts. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Laura Clausen. She's the editor, writer over at Daily Kos, the labor page. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Laura Clausen's name. Let's talk about the roads and bridges because we all know it has to be done. As much as Karl Rove and the Republicans want to destroy it for now because, we don't want to give Obama any credit for anything. How are they going to go about destroying it? I see that Tom Colburn, he did the FAA thing. We're seeing other people, giving us these bizarre choices between actual bridges and some voluntary things. Your thoughts?
It's astonishing. When Republicans want to cut funding for other things in the transportation bill, like bike paths that keep bikers safe and give us all more options for how we get around, Then bridges are the most important thing. But when it comes to actually funding bridge repair for our 70,000 structurally deficient bridges in this country, then we can't afford it because we have to give tax cuts to multimillionaires. So it's this constant bait and switch. We have to cut this thing so that we can fund bridges. Well, we can't fund the bridges because we have to give tax cuts to millionaires. It's never ending.
I look at that. There was a civil engineer report, and I'm sure you've probably seen it, where they came out and they basically gave our entire infrastructure of the nation something like a D. And they went through airports and bridges, and they went through roads, and they went through broadband access and all of these things. And we got nothing above a C, waterways, everything, because we haven't invested in these things in at least a generation. Quite frankly, we haven't since the WPA and the Depression, to be honest, in most things.
Right, and the very politicians who would attack you viciously if you said anything but the United States is absolutely the leader and the greatest in every single thing, these are the same politicians who are making us fall further and further behind on things like sewer systems and safe bridges.
Yeah, you wrote an article called Bridges Are Crumbling Because of Broken Politics, and you wrote in there that someone had sent you a picture of the Route 128 bridge in Gloucester, Massachusetts. I have driven over that bridge hundreds of times over the years, and it is a busy bridge, something like 58,000 vehicles per day going over that, and the pictures I saw, I got to be honest, scared the hell out of me.
It's terrifying. It's rusting. There are places where you can see holes in the metal. When I went to college, there was a bridge near my college that had been being repaired for something like 3 years. And it was a pain in the butt to get over this bridge where there was construction going on. But then you would think, yeah, but would I have wanted to be the last person to drive over it before they started the construction?
Yeah. Who wants to be the one that falls off of it when it collapses?
Right.
And you go, how many bridges across the country are considered structurally deficient? And, how many I-35, how many bridges like the I-35 one in Minneapolis do we have to have before people go, oh, yeah, good idea?
Right. It's expensive to repair a bridge, but it's so much more expensive to have to completely rebuild one after having it shut down for months, never mind the loss of life.
Unfortunately, we here in Pennsylvania, we are number one. So, Pennsylvanians, puff your chest out, deep breath in, and put up your one finger and say, we're number one! We're number one in structurally deficient bridges in the country. Congratulations.
Yep.
Something like 27%? Is that right?
That's just about right. And Pittsburgh is the leading metropolitan area in the country as well. So you're number one in two categories.
All right. See, if we allow things to crumble fast enough, maybe we could be number one in a whole bunch of other things. But you know, what it tells me is here in Pennsylvania, we've got an opportunity to put people back to work.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. For as broken as Florida politics is, apparently Florida has done a great job prioritizing its bridges and is one of the safest states in the country as far as bridges.
Well, have you ever been down that Route 1 bridge going all the way down to the Keys? That thing had better be safe because start swimming because it's going to be a couple miles before you find land. So I would hope that they have at least a decent bridge down there.
Yeah, well, you know.
Fun times.
We've all crossed some bridges like that were not safe.
Fun times. So what's the answer here? Where do we go? How do we get out of this?
I mean, you know, it's hard to know with this Congress we have, with any Congress we can imagine having for the next couple of cycles. What we're seeing is Republicans just refusing to do anything that would move us ahead. And, you know, President Obama is trying to go around Congress on a few things, but there's only so much he can do.
Right. So it comes down to we need a new Congress. Throw the bums out.
Absolutely.
That's a good start. Laura Crossan, I appreciate the time. Contributing editor at the Daily Kos labor page. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
I'm fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight. And we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around. And everybody said, this is a union town. A union town. All down the line. This is a union town. A union town. All down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town. All down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg.
Astonishingly, some Wall Streeters continue to be clueless about what the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. Yoo-hoo, Streeters, note that the movement's name has the term Wall Street in it. While there's a plethora of particular issues being raised by the protesters, the unifying theme is a protest against the rising tide of economic inequality that's enriching the most privileged few by knocking down America's workaday majority. And guess who is the most powerful perpetrators of this greed-fueled disparity? Yes, Wall Street. For example, even as the protest was spreading in mid-October to hundreds of cities, executives at Bank of America announced three moves. One, to goose up their own extravagant pay, they're socking financially stressed debit card users with a new $5 a month fee. Second, they're dumping 30,000 of the bank's worker bees onto America's already swollen unemployment rolls. Goodbye and good luck finding another job. Third, two top executives who are departing the bank are being handed golden parachutes totaling $11 million. In the midst of this, Steve Bartlett opened his mouth. A former Congress critter who's now Wall Street's top Washington lobbyist, he is a perfect symbol of the infuriating corrupt coziness between financial elites and lawmakers. Yet, Bartlett blithely says that, quote, we don't see ourselves as the target of the protests. After all, he explains, Wall Street has to be well capitalized and well financed for the economy to recover. This is Jim Hightower saying, golly, Steve, what part of the public's multi-trillion dollar bailout of the street's elite did you not see? We the people see every glaring dime of it. And we also see that rather than helping our economy recover, you're now lobbying in Congress to kill Wall Street reforms so banksters can grab even more at our expense.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
Because they're selling make-believe and we don't buy that here. Because in the real world they're shutting Detroit down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Of course, question, comment, something on your mind, feel free to give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I was reading this article about China, and, you know, they're doing everything they can possibly do to recreate the U.S. of the 50s. You know, they've got their industries that they're trying to build. They're trying to create a middle class. They're trying to create, you know, something of the, what we remember to be the 50s. So I found it interesting when Reuters reported that the Chinese are ordering cutbacks on television entertainment. They want to limit the number of hours that entertainment programming is allowed on television. Any of their matchmaking game shows, their dance competitions, you know, that garbage that fills our mind, American Idiot, and Dancing with the Washed Up Stars. The stuff we fill our mind with, American Idol and Cheetos. You know, basically bread and circus. Well, they're saying, no, we want to limit that. We've seen what it has done to the American people. Turn some of their minds to mush. What we want to replace them with is morality building programming. Yes, we want to go back to the days of Leave It to Beaver and Ozzie and Harriet and, you know, keep promoting that good social fabric, that good, you know, neighborly stuff, propaganda, basically. So they are saying that they want to restrict the hours during, you know, 7:30 to 10. There can only be 2 hours, two entertainment programs. So I don't know if that's 2 hours or 2 half hours, but they're saying two, that's it. And the rest of the time you're going to have to fill with programs that promote harmony, health, and Main Street culture, which I'm not quite sure what that means. And to be honest, neither are the people who run the Chinese television networks. Not quite sure. But, you know, the director of this program is saying, look, you know, we don't want excessive entertainment. We want to make sure that we keep pushing our propaganda. And, you know, I guess it's interesting to try, but in the world of VCRs, the world of the internet, the world of DVD players and iPhones and all the other things, I don't know how you're going to enforce that, but I'm sure that they will figure out how, because they've done a pretty good job of controlling the information, even with the internet that gets in. And what scares me is that maybe the enterprising fascist state that may be coming, if the Republicans take over in 2012, we may be seeing only two entertainment programs a day here, which I think there would actually be a revolt over if they were to try something like that. Don't you think? I mean, at some point, take my American Idol, we're going to the streets. Never mind the income inequality, never mind the gulf between the haves and have-nots, but take my American Idiot and I'm going to the streets.
It is amazing how many people watch it.
You know,
it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking about the debates. And, you know, like they do with American Idol, what they should do with the debates then, since we seem to be this American Idiot culture, we should have, like, you know, text in, and we should have call-ins and internet-ins to see who won. So that you can have instant feedback. And make it like a reality thing. And maybe, you know, the winner has to do some kind of stunt, you know, maybe eat some grasshoppers or something. It sounds good to me. What do you think?
I'm not sure about that.
We're doing a whole bunch of other crazy things. Look at the Klan that we've got running. I mean, it's nuts. But if you go back, and the reason I brought this up, you go back to the 50s, where I think the Chinese want to make sure that their people stay. I wish we could almost go back to the 50s. When you look at the income inequality and what we've talked about Krugman's Great Compression, we all grew together. The more prosperity was out there, the more it was spread across the entire economic scale. And the folks over at the Connect the Dots USA, connectthedotsusa.com, put out a really great graph that said from 1947 to 1979 where the income growth went. And they said the bottom 20% over that period from 47 to 79 grew at 116%. The second 20%, 100%. The third, that middle 20, the quote-unquote middle of the middle class, grew at 111%. The fourth or the second highest 20%, 114%. And the very top, the tippy-tippy top, the top 20%, the heavy 20, They grew by 99%. So they grew the least. Everybody else came up. And you had broad-based prosperity. But then they show you the next chart from 1980 until 2007. The folks at the bottom 20%, only grew by 15%. The second 20, 22%. The middle 20 by 23%. The fourth 20 by 33%. So it's slowly going up. You know, that second to the top 20%, 95%. But boy, the very top 1%, well over, well, they say 261. The CBO said 275% over that same period. So when you hear people talking about, well, you're talking about redistribution of wealth, Rick. We don't want to redistribute wealth. We want people to be able to earn whatever it is they can. Really? Well, then which one would you prefer your society to have? A society where we all grew together and we all prospered, or a society where, you know what, the majority of us struggling to make ends meet and the top 1% of us doing very well, thank you very much, taking from the rest? I mean, you could have had the same growth chart from 1980 to 2007 that you had from 1947 to 1979. Do you know why we didn't? Well, you had the Reagan-esque attack on the tax code. You had the Reagan-esque attack on organized labor. So you take the two things that stabilize your income base, the two things that make sure that the bottom has an opportunity, you take them out of the equation, and you get what we've gotten, which is screwed. We've been ripped off. And when I hear people say, oh, well, Scott Walker saved the state, $500 million, and Kasich saved the state of Ohio $1 billion, and Tom Corbett saved the state, $800 million. Excuse me, how'd they save that? Were they clipping coupons, pinching pennies? No, they were stealing wages from people. And what'd they do with it? They handed it out to corporate America. More tax breaks, more loopholes. Here in Pennsylvania, the Delaware loophole, we just love multi-state corporations. Sure, go ahead and take your profits to that magic box. There's a magic box in Delaware, a little 4x4 box by about 10 inches long. Just this magic tunnel to wonder and prosperity, where profits from Pennsylvania go magically through this transformation into this magical box and scrubbed of all responsibility and all responsibility, I guess, is the best word I go, to the state of Pennsylvania, to the workers of this state, to the taxpayers. Gone. One little box. So the question then becomes is, which kind of society do we want? Do we want an equal society where we all, where the boat is raised when the tides go higher? Or one where, hey, buddy, here's an anchor. Good luck. You're out of the boat. Because that's where we are. There are too many people falling behind. Too many people falling out of the boat. And why? Well, as I said, the tax code and union member density. As union membership has declined, so has the number of people who are in the middle class. And so has that distribution of wealth. Why do you think there is so much money aggressively seeking to destroy your right to collective bargaining? Why do you think there's so much activity, so much political will to destroy your right? I don't see them out there creating jobs. If they would take this kind of passion and this kind of energy and this kind of initiative to create jobs and to turn our nation around and to rebuild our infrastructure, we would have the hottest economy on the planet and the best infrastructure. But these people don't care about this country. What they care about is themselves, their political power, and the profits for the very wealthy, not you or me. It's insane. But they tell us, oh, corporations are people. Corporations are people. And like I've said, as soon as we execute one, maybe they can be people. And when we talk to our next guest, Daniel Kane, Secretary Treasurer there at the United Mine Workers of America. I'm going to ask him about the 29 miners who were killed in the Upper Big Branch mine disaster and why we haven't seen Don Blankenship at least being a guest at the Gray Bar Hotel. if not executed. Do that, and maybe we can talk about having the corporate personhood that they so desperately want. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this with Daniel Kane. Stick around.
Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseccu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and had a father red. Father sure left to carry on. Blue denim had his vape. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there. Or you can, if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and you can take your program on the go. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I saw today the United Mine Workers of America. They accused Massey Energy, and I'm right there with it on this, that the people who ran Massey, they're guilty of industrial homicide. And I've been saying this for the longest time. You know, why is it that Don Blankenship is walking free while these 29 people lost their lives in that mine in West Virginia? And today there was a press conference in Charleston, West Virginia, where the UMWA went out and said, here's our report. We have got dug to the bottom of it, 90-page report that they released today. And I've got Dan Kane, the secretary treasurer there at the United Mine Workers of America, to come talk to us about the report and the 2 years since this tragedy has happened. Dan, thanks for taking time for me.
My pleasure.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, people hear industrial homicide. You hear the words, a rogue corporation. Some may be turned off. I'm saying spot on.
Well, I'll tell you what. We undertook this investigation with only one agenda in mind, and that was to get to the absolute truth. We didn't go looking to absolve anyone or to accuse anyone unjustly. We just wanted to get to the facts. And what the facts tell us is that Massey has run a campaign of intimidation against its workers for too long. If you complain about Stacy, you're threatened with discipline or discharge, and they have fired workers for that. You know, we need to look at exactly what caused this explosion. And there are a number of safeguards that are written into the law. First, proper ventilation. There are numerous ventilation problems at Massey. There wasn't enough air to the face, and it caused the methane accumulation. That's a violation. The methane was ignited by worn bits on the shear that should have been changed, and they weren't. Sprays should have been working, and they weren't. And those are both violations. It caused a methane ignition, which ignited a coal dust explosion. A lot of people forget. Coal dust is extremely explosive.
Yep.
And it's controlled in the mine with ventilation, which we've already seen was a problem, and ultimately by mixing rock dust with the float coal dust. The rock dust makes the coal dust inert. Massey did not rock dust their mine properly. That is a major violation. And we determined that it would have added less than 1 cent per ton to the cost of their coal. Rock dust that.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, and I've got the clip somewhere of Don Blankenship say, the memo of Don Blankenship saying, you know, we don't get paid to do anything else. We run coal here.
That's another important factor in this. Massey pushed production above all else. If any, even if their foreman would try to slow down to catch up on rock dusting or any other needed safety work, they'd be told, if you can't get run coal, you get your bucket and go home. Now, that is intentional negligence. If you would operate your motor vehicle in a negligent manner, intentionally, and you killed someone because you acted recklessly, you'd go to jail. This shouldn't be any different.
Yeah, and I keep saying if you know, Massey Energy or any of these big companies want to be people, we should be able to execute them like you would a person who killed 29 people. But, you know, you brought up a number of issues. And you know, coal dust, very combustible, explosive. Same thing with wood dust or sugar dust or any of that stuff. And it needs to be regulated. But what I find interesting, and I got this clip of Don Blankenship saying, you know, oh, violations are part of the business.
Well, I mean, violations are, unfortunately a normal part of the mining process. You know, you have inspections every day, and it's hard to differentiate sometimes between, you know, head count or number counts on violations and the seriousness or type of it. But certainly there are violations at every coal mine in America, and UVB was a mine that had violations.
What do you say to someone saying something like that? To me, that should be Exhibit A in his trial to be sitting behind bars.
Absolutely. And listen, he could make a point that there are violations at every coal mine. But I want to tell you something. Most mines in the country try to run their mine in a safe manner. In most mines, when they find violations, they're fixed immediately. At a union mine, if a worker points out a violation, the foreman, it'll be fixed. At Massey Mines, he'll be fired if he doesn't keep his mouth shut. And the level and the seriousness of the violations at this mine are just absolutely beyond belief. It's a disgrace. He should have shut that mine down if he couldn't run it properly. It's terrible what's happened to these families. This will live with them forever.
You know, but I think, again, you know, you go back to what he had said in his memo. You know, we get paid to run coal. It's not about, you know, building any safety structures. It's not about any of that. It's about making the profit.
He's convicted by the words in his own memo.
So why hasn't this happened? What, you know, is there any movement to get someone like this arrested? Because look, at the end of the day, there are 29 families who are missing loved ones, and this guy's still walking the face of the earth a free man.
Well, we're told that there's a criminal investigation underway, and I hope that's true. it needs to be true. Because I want to tell you something. When Massey was bought out and by Alpha and upper management, the same people who knowingly pushed mining in this manner, when they left with millions of dollars, and that's not right. The penalty for killing your workers isn't supposed to be a bonus, and you go on about your way.
Yeah, you know,
but you got to understand, Massey has tremendous political and economic power.
They sure do. You know, I've said often, if I wanted to kill someone, I'd just hire him and put him in really unsafe conditions. Say, oh, gee, it was an accident. Sorry. Here's the couple of $1,000 in fines, and I'd walk away.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be what happens. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Daniel Kane, International Secretary Treasurer for the United Mine Workers of America. You know, the bigger point here, Dan, is I think what you said earlier. In a union mine, people have the ability to go and go, something's not right here, fix it. I'm not putting myself in that position. Are we organizing them? And it really, not just in mines, but in any job across this country where people should have a voice on the job and a voice to when they put themselves in harm's way.
Well, you know, that's another interesting point. Apparently, and not only are safety laws being broken by these big corporations in this country, but so are labor laws. It is illegal to threaten and intimidate workers when there's an organizing drive going on. Yet companies do it every day. There's an entire industry of union busting, you know, labor consultants that has sprung up around doing that. And they will threaten the employees and they get away with it. In those rare occasions where they're found guilty, the penalty is, if they fired someone, they have to pay him back pay, that he's money that he would have gotten anyway. And then they have to post a notice on the bulletin board that they won't do it again. I said that's kind of like if you were walking out of a bank that you just robbed and you get caught, that your penalty would be you had to give the money back and post the notice that you wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, say I'm
that's
sorry.
How we enforce labor laws in this country.
Well, I guess it has a lot to do with how labor is viewed. I mean, the fact that the Colombian Free Trade Agreement passed through with 77 senators speaks volumes to me.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. Colombia is even more hostile to its workers. Down there, local union leaders, just regular workers, are pulled off the job and murdered.
That's why I brought it up. I mean, the fact that we have a United States Senate that's 70, they keep telling us nothing can get accomplished. There's total gridlock in Washington, D.C., but yet 77 senators saw fit to pass a free trade agreement with a country that pulls people off of buses and shoots them in the head or throws them off of planes.
Yeah, it's an absolute disgrace. We need to get back to having respect for workers. You know, it's funny. Workers can't get treated as people, but corporations can. It's shameful.
Absolutely shameful. Let's talk about the 29 families who are struggling from this. You know, what happened to them in the aftermath? I know initially there was a huge outpouring of support. Everybody was, you know, was in support of these 29 families. But as time wanes on, what happens to those families? Where are they now? What kind of things have happened to them?
Well, we met with the families today and gave them our report, and they were grateful to hear that. They were there with representatives. A number of them have lawsuits against the company. There are some of them who have accepted a settlement from the company. But the thing is, that doesn't make them whole. That doesn't give them back the loved ones that they lost. There are still wives who are without their husbands, their children without their fathers. And the ones who are seeking fairness, who didn't accept the company's settlement, they have to go on about their daily lives, paying the bills, trying to raise their kids. It's very difficult. It is. So they're struggling to do the best they can.
Yeah, I don't wish that upon anyone, and I hope and pray that it doesn't happen to another miner or another worker in this country, even though we know it will at some point. But that's why we need to fight like hell to make
Absolutely.
Sure that the people who are living get a fair shake. Let's get back to this report for a second. The conclusion, I mean, what's the answer here? What can we do in the future to make sure that this never happens again, that these tragedies are avoided in the future, and that we begin to hold people accountable for the blatant disregard for human life and this idea that we're going to put profits ahead of people?
Well, that's a good point. And we've made a number of recommendations. First off, we need to make sure that the agencies have greater enforcement authority. And that, first off, they need to follow the recommendations of what come out of this investigation. The governor of West Virginia did an independent investigation panel. They also released a report, which I think they did a pretty good job. And first off, I think the main thing that needs to be done is that the people responsible for this need to be held accountable.
Absolutely.
They can't get away with that. And we need to give, we're calling for a grand jury to be impaneled, for subpoenas to be issued, and people brought to justice. The agencies also have to employ more specialists in ventilation and the control of methane. They should also, they have to unclog the appeal system right now. That's another thing that companies do when they get violations. They will appeal them to the review board, and it keeps them off a pattern violation, a pattern of violations where they're put under increased scrutiny. That system has to stop. There's a number of recommendations in our report. I won't read through all of them.
Right.
It would take some time.
If I remember what you were talking about clogging up the judicial system, that was a Blankenship move, wasn't it? Wasn't he one of the first people who decided every violation, we're going to take it all the way to the extreme to clog the system so that they can't hold us accountable?
He's one of the leading proponents of that. There are other companies that do it also. But the system has to be cleared out, and one of the things that we think needs to happen when those violations are appealed, the company should have to escrow the amount of the fine in an account so that they don't get to keep the money until
until
appeal is decided.
Right.
And also that should not keep them off a pattern of violations. The violation should count towards that so they get increased scrutiny. We also need greater legal whistleblower protections for those miners who don't have the benefit of a union contract so that they cannot be intimidated into performing unsafe acts. That's one of the leading causes of unsafe conditions in the mine.
You know, when I look at this, and this is the last question I've got for you, you know, you brought up agency enforcement, and to me, I'm sorry, I just don't know that I don't feel all that comfortable with agencies, with more enforcement, being the answer. I want them to have the ability to enforce things, to shut mines down on the site to have that ability. And I would have to say, I can't believe that there's someone who will go underground in this country and not have the protection of a labor union behind them. And I would have to think that, these 29 who were killed in the Upper Big Branch and the others who have died over the last couple of years in disasters around the country, that isn't the clarion call to say, you know what? I need to have that strength behind me, the strength of all of my brothers and sisters down here in the mine to say, no, we're not doing it.
Well, those of us who are members of the union and understand that, we struggle with that too sometimes. But we also have to keep our eyes on the fact that in a lot of these areas, these jobs are the only good jobs around. It's virtually the only choice for these people. And the companies hold that over their head. And they make sure that their employees understand, if you don't do it my way, you won't be employed. You'll have to move away, take your family somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's illegal, and we need to start enforcing not just the safety laws, but also the labor laws in this country.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I got to be honest, that was one of my great hopes for President Obama when he took office, that he would be the guy who saved work in this country and that we'd have seen something like the Employee Free Choice Act become law. Unfortunately, that has not been the case.
I'm very disappointed in him in that regard. But we keep pushing. We keep pushing to get labor law reform.
And that's what we need. Daniel Kane, International Secretary, Treasurer of the United Mine Workers of America. I appreciate the time. Thank you for the report. Thank you for keeping this in the public eye, because we need to know about this stuff and we need to hear more of it.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and we're going to keep at it.
Thank you so much, Dan. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts? What do you think of this? I think my thought's pretty clear. Organize, unionize, have a voice. Back after this.
Why we fight, why we
for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job. They're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that happen!
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
That's what's going on around the country when you look at what's going on with the Occupy people. You know the folks in New York, especially in Albany, being praised for having a police department, you know, capital of the state police, and the city of Albany police who are saying, you know what, we're not going to go in and crack heads. We're not going to go in and do any of this. We've got a decent relationship. We're going to maintain those open lines of communication. We're going to do policing. They're not breaking the law. It's their First Amendment right to do. In fact, the guy who's the district attorney of Allegheny County, a guy named David Souris, he says, look, you know, as long as you're not doing anything wrong, why do we need cops? Why do we need this curfew that the governor seems to want and the mayor of Albany seems to want? In fact, he said, you know what? These people who are doing this occupation of Albany, it's a wonderful protest. Things have been fine. The relationship couldn't be better. Why sour that? And the same thing here in Harrisburg. The police have been supportive. When they drive by, they beep their horn. And I'm told that our 11 o'clock guest, Joshua Holland, may not be here. Evidently, he has been gassed, tear gassed by the police in Oakland, California. Somebody hit a couple of his quick tweets. He said cops are announcing that anyone here for any purpose subject to arrest, media presumably included. He goes on to tweet the for any purpose bit is blatantly unconstitutional. He says, I have every right to stay here and to report. And then he goes, wow, it's become a war zone quickly. The media trucks were engulfed in clouds of tear gas too. Nasty stuff. Is this the police force that we were paying for? I mean, kind of a messaging problem here, don't you think, Jake? I mean, when we're talking about how we keep cops on the streets, I'm sure those people who are being tear gassed are going, I'm paying to be tear gassed?
Well, here's the thing, Rick. I guarantee you something like this gets attention, and in a bizarre way, it's probably what is needed. You need controversy, you need attention, you need something to get the attention of the American people. Hey, look, this is what's happening in your country. Is this what we want? It harkens back, and again, you were a little bit young, but it harkens back to what happened in the 60s, in the Vietnam protests. It got vicious, it got ugly. Students were shot dead. It's a little bit like what happened during the labor movement days, when the labor movement, maybe it wasn't quite as long and protracted, but it was the same viciousness, and the power structure, literally shot down innocent people. I'm not advocating that at all. What I'm saying is, when something like this happens and you obviously are taking away basic constitutional rights, it's time for America to stand up and notice.
See, I would argue that our labor history is probably the bloodiest on the planet. You go back through the years where they called out the National Guard to shoot people in the back. We've got a long history of treating workers poorly. But, the thing is I hope it doesn't come to this. Because at the end of the day, those cops, they're part of us. They're part of the 99%. And, when I hear something like this, I'm taken back to Jay Gould. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And when you go in and you tear gas people who are sleeping, and from what I'm told, they've basically tear gassed a couple of blocks. So you can't even get away from it if you wanted to. And I hope we can get Joshua Holland on to talk about it and see what find out what it's like to be tear gassed. I hope we don't see that here. I hope those open lines of communication, I'm hoping this doesn't turn into a war zone, which, unfortunately, could happen. And we're already seeing the groundwork being laid. You're seeing the T-Twit groups out there going, oh, well, they're blocking traffic. And, oh, they left a gum wrapper on the ground. And, oh, they're doing this. And, oh, they're doing that. Looking for any reason to go in and crush these people's rights. And at the end of the day, it is their right to be there. This idea that I need a permit to protest my government? I need a permit to go to the Capitol and say, no more stealing of my rights, no voter ID bill, no theft of public assets, no theft of public education, no selling off my assets. We want to hold people who've destroyed this economy and who have killed working people accountable. I think, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm crazy, but I think we need to be in the streets. I think we need to be the squeaky wheel. I think we need to point out the injustice. We need to point out the income inequality. We need to point out who has benefited from the blood, sweat, and tears of the American worker and how we've suffered because of it. And what's interesting to me is that none of them in the political process, and understand, this has to be political. I know a lot of people who want to get into the Occupy movement. Oh, we're going to take things over. No, you need to get to the ballot box. You need to organize, and you need to be at that ballot box pushing your policies, pushing your candidates. Get a slate of people out there to push an agenda. Because if you look at what came out of New York, every single one of their demands is a legislative demand. It's not a demand like the T-Twits to destroy government. It's a demand for government to work for me, to work for you, and to work for all of us in this country. And there's smart policies. What we need are smart politicians. What we need are politicians with a set of stones who are going to stand up and fight back against the tide of corporate money who has destroyed this nation and has poisoned our political process, and to throw bums like Eric Cantor and John Boehner and the rest of, and then Hardy Williams and the rest of these bums, throw them the hell out and get some people in who will actually stand up for us. We're taking a break. Hopefully back with Joshua Holland. Stick around.
Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Republicans continue to stand with the Wall Street one percenters as Senate Republicans unanimously blocked President Obama's Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act. United Steelworkers President Leo Girard says the politicians in D.C. flipped the bird to the Occupy movement. If the majority really ruled America, Girard says, the jobs legislation would pass. Girard says Congress rejected bills that would create at least 1.9 million jobs while passing trade bills that help the wealthiest 1%. An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found 64% of Americans believe that Congress should pass Obama's jobs legislation. 64% say it's a good idea to raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations. Despite solid majority support for jobs legislation and taxing the rich more to pay for it, Republicans refuse to follow the will of the American people, choosing instead to continue to represent the 1%. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the senators who blocked the Teachers and First Responders Jobs Act are refusing to listen to the majority of Americans. Henry says these senators are siding with millionaires over the unemployed. National Nurses United and Occupy Chicago marched on Chicago City Hall Monday, protesting the arrests of two nurses along with 130 Occupy protesters over the weekend in Grant Park. Martise Chisholm is one of the nurses arrested for operating a medical first aid tent serving protesters.
We were denied our phone calls, and we were put in jail for speaking up for our rights, and that's un-American.
We here advocate for our patients and to advocate for Wall Street protesters. They have a right to be here, and they should be allowed to.
Police tore down the nurses' medical aid station and arrested scores of other protesters peaceably assembled to support the station. The other nurse arrested in Chicago is Jan Rodolfo. She says Mayor Rahm Emanuel should respect both the nurses' medical mission and the First Amendment rights of the Occupy Chicago protest.
Rahm Emanuel has the ability, as other mayors do across the country and have done, to respect the rights of protesters. If an encampment can exist on Wall Street, then an encampment can exist in the city of Chicago.
National Nurses United's Roseanne DeMauro says the arrests are disgraceful and won't stop nurses from continuing their medical first aid mission, setting up the Chicago station again, and continuing to support the protests. The AFT-affiliated Berkeley Federation of Teachers has successfully organized two Realm charter schools. Berkeley Federation of Teachers President Kathy Campbell.
We are a professional union. We know that our contracts and our actions affect students and their families. One of the things that really appealed to these charter school teachers, who are obviously deeply committed, really committed to their students and families, wanted collective voice through a union, but one that was very professional and very progressive.
This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America and by the National Education Association. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
They blame with some justification the problems in the financial sector for getting us into this mess, and they're dissatisfied with the policy response here in Washington, and at some level I can't blame them. Certainly 9% unemployment and very slow growth is not a very good situation.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Let's go to Oakland, and where I guess it's turned into a war zone. I got Joshua Holland, editor and senior writer with Alternet there, as he's tweeted, turned into a war zone quickly. Joshua, thanks for the time, man.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me. I'm behind about 500 people. They're very, very angry. There's a lot of tension out here. We were just tear gassed about 10 minutes ago. We've been walking around in circles, basically, for a few hours now. Every time they stop to protest, they get a dispersal order where the Oakland police tells them that if they don't leave immediately, they will be subject to chemical weapons and may face serious injury. It's very hectic out here.
And this is America, huh?
That's what they tell me. I'm not sure if the First Amendment is in effect right now in Oakland. They're giving these announcements. They say, you must vacate the premises. You can't be here for any purposes. Now, that strikes me as a reporter as blatantly unconstitutional. I mean, I have a right to report on this no matter what.
Absolutely. And what it sounds like to me is we're declaring martial law. I mean, are they gonna? I guess they're going to start locking people up.
Well, you know, they've locked up. So I talked to a Legal Observer with National Lawyers Guild. They have the names of 105 people in detention. Some of them are facing $10,000 bail. Others will be cited and released. That's a slow process. I've also just seen a remarkably aggressive stance by police here, which is counterproductive. You have a volatile crowd of angry people. I feel like if they had let them protest,
yep.
In other words, if they had let them get to where they were trying to get to, which was the jail, and protested, then we wouldn't have had so much violence. I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff tonight. I've had dozens of flashbang grenades go off around me. It's just been extraordinarily hectic and unnecessary. Remember, this is all ostensibly because of health and safety violations. That's what the mayor's office said. Now, I would point out that that's total nonsense because there was a very small, relatively new satellite camp where there, you know, it was like on a grassy hill over the Lake Merritt. And it was crystal clear. I mean, it was sparkling clean. I visited it on Saturday. There were certainly no safety and health violations there. So what they're saying, essentially, is that it's illegal to protest overnight in the city of Oakland. Now, the courts have said that when you make restrictions on people's expressive activities, political activities, they have to be as narrowly tailored as possible to serve some legitimate government function. So if they want to clear out the plaza to clean it up, that's one thing. They belie their justification by shutting down every protest in Oakland after 10 p.m.
Interesting. What I was told is that when they first started tear gassing people, when they start throwing in these canisters, their rationale was the protesters tried to gas them first. Any truth to that?
Well, this was the story that we had early this morning from police. I understand that they reversed it during the press conference at 10:30 this morning, but I didn't attend that press conference. That's from another reporter who was there, said that they, in fact, said that it was them that deployed the tear gas. I find it a little bit difficult to believe that protesters have those kinds of implements. I've seen protesters throw water bottles. That's the extent of the protesters' armament that I've seen.
Yeah, water bottles, tear gas, I get it. It's
I mean, they're very, very generous with the, you know, I saw them shooting beanbag guns. There were a lot of non-lethal projectiles fired. It's just been extremely hectic and I think unnecessarily aggressive. And again, it seems that that kind of aggression is just counterproductive. These people are more angry, more radicalized than they were a few hours ago, I would say.
So basically what you're telling me is that the police have escalated the situation. They've caused the chaos. They haven't been the ones who have stepped in to try and quell it. They're the ones who've caused it.
You know, I think that this is the most inept crowd control I've ever seen. And I come from a background reporting on trade. So I've seen WTO protests and in China and Mexico and Canada. This is by far the most inept police response because it's just all aggression without any thought to how to diffuse steam that builds up. Again, if you let people protest, if you let them achieve their small objective, then you don't generate this kind of anger that you do when you form lines and box them in and then tear gas them.
Yep.
People here are extremely angry, and I think they have every right to be. I have to say I'm angry as well.
What are you seeing going on right now, and what's the response? Because it sounds to me that you've just got people going anywhere, and there's really no direction to where the police are trying to focus them.
They are trying to keep them out of the plaza in front of City Hall. This is where they've been camped for the last 3 weeks. And every time we get close to there, they act very aggressively and order us to disperse, subject to arrest and chemical weapons. So, I think that the strategy at this point is to keep marching, because when you're marching, then you're not subject to those dispersal orders.
Right.
They seem to happen when the crowd stops somewhere.
Let me ask you this, Joshua Holland. I look at what's going on in Albany, where the cops have said, no, we're not going to go bash the heads of the hippies. And I look here in Harrisburg, where the police have actually worked with them. And it's been an open line of communication where, you know, hey, you do your thing, you stay within the law, we're all right. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, I just thought there was more tear gas.
No, I mean, I'm still suffering from the effect a little bit, but yes, I'm fine. You're absolutely right. There's such a variation in how police departments respond to these things. I would say that this is reflective of very long-standing problems in Oakland between the city government and the police department and the community at large. This is not just related to Occupy Wall Street. There's an enormous amount of distrust and even hostility towards the police among protesters here that I haven't seen, for example, at Occupy San Francisco.
Well, if I remember right, isn't that where they had the transit authority problems, where they had shut down?
They tend to shoot people in dubious circumstances. So, yes, there's an enormous amount of antipathy within the community towards the Oakland Police Department.
So obviously this is not helping. Let me ask you a last question. You got tear gassed. What's the experience there?
Oh, God, it's horrible. Fortunately, I mean, I've been tear gassed a few times before, and I didn't want to be tear gassed again. So I stood kind of as far away as I could while still observing things. And as soon as I saw that gas go up, I moved. So I was only exposed to a very small amount, but I saw people, you know, really gagging and choking, and, you know, I just teared up for a few minutes and have that nasty taste in the back of my throat. Others were subject to a lot more gas.
And again, this is how we treat our citizens.
Apparently. It's not a pretty sight.
Well, Josh, keep safe. Stay out of harm's way and let us know if anything else happens and anything else goes on. We appreciate the work you're doing out there.
Thanks so much, Rick. I appreciate you having me.
Stay safe, man. You know, you look at this, and again, you know, to me, it makes no sense. And we've talked about in the past what's going on out in California, especially in Oakland when they had that, I guess they wanted to protest at the train station. They shut down all the internet access. They shut down all the cell phone access. Really could have caused a major, major problem. So they had people protesting and they handled that poorly. Here again, handling things poorly. I just don't understand what the hell is wrong with letting them stay somewhere and saying, okay, fine, but you got to keep the place clean. Maybe throwing a porta potty out there to make sanitary. If you're going to talk about public health, help them a little bit. That's what makes sense to me. This going out there shooting tear gas all over the place, bashing people's heads, makes no sense. It does nobody any good. Well, I shouldn't say that. It does the protest, the overall movement good, because now people are going to get angry. People are going to pay attention.
I don't know what the power structure is afraid of, but you touched on something I was about to say. You know, all that's going to do is get people who may not necessarily agree with a lot of the things that the protesters are out there protesting, but they're out there protesting those protesters' basic constitutional rights to protest, which every American should guard jealously. I think this is going to backfire on this.
And right now in Oakland, California, what's going on? It's a war zone. It looks like any of those places in Latin America where the military industrial complex, the police come in and start bashing people and tear gassing them. Here in this country, that makes no sense to me. And, you know, you stop and you think about some of the things that have gone on in the past, Seattle with the WTO, the G20 stuff, where you've had some pretty heavy-handed tactics. Instead of saying, you know what, keep it within bounds, keep it within within the respect of the law, and not have cops causing the problems. I'm hoping that the people here in Harrisburg take notice, and I'm hoping people across this country take notice. This is not how you deal with this. It makes no sense. None whatsoever. You know, because we go over to the one here in Harrisburg, and, you know, they have a really good relationship with the police there. The Capitol Police are, you know, there's almost no police presence whatsoever. I mean, you every once in a while you see them, but for the most part, there's not this overarching authoritarian watching eye. And maybe it is because this is the Capitol and they're used to people coming out and protesting. But, you know, what's going on in Oakland? And I hope our friend Josh Holland is all right, and I hope he doesn't get gassed again, because I don't think anybody would like that. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Astonishingly, some Wall Streeters continue to be clueless about what the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. Yoo-hoo, Streeters, note that the movement's name has the term Wall Street in it. While there's a plethora of particular issues being raised by the protesters, the unifying theme is a protest against the rising tide of economic inequality that's enriching the most privileged few by knocking down America's workaday majority. And guess who is the most powerful perpetrators of this greed-fueled disparity? Yes, Wall Street. For example, even as the protest was spreading in mid-October to hundreds of cities, executives at Bank of America announced three moves. One, to goose up their own extravagant pay, they're socking financially stressed debit card users with a new $5 a month fee. Second, they're dumping 30,000 of the bank's worker bees onto America's already swollen unemployment rolls. Goodbye and good luck finding another job. Third, two top executives who are departing the bank are being handed golden parachutes totaling $11 million. In the midst of this, Steve Bartlett opened his mouth. A former Congress critter who's now Wall Street's top Washington lobbyist, he is a perfect symbol of the infuriating corrupt coziness between financial elites and lawmakers. Yet, Bartlett blithely says that, quote, "We don't see ourselves as the target of the protests." After all, he explains, Wall Street has to be well-capitalized and well-financed for the economy to recover. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Golly, Steve, what part of the public's multi-trillion dollar bailout of the street's elite did you not see? We the people see every glaring dime of it. And we also see that rather than helping our economy recover, you're now lobbying in Congress to kill Wall Street reforms so banksters can grab even more at our expense."
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. And I got to tell you, I salute Josh Holland, man. Out there in Oakland, tear gassed. Just a sad state of affairs. And I'm hoping we don't see more of this, and our thoughts are with him and all of the people out there, that nobody gets hurt. And, you know, we can begin to turn this around. And again, you know, all of this stems from the fact that we have been, as a working class in this country, screwed constantly. And, you know, it just didn't begin in 2010. It didn't just begin with Scott Walker in Wisconsin. It just didn't begin then. It's been going on. But that was the spark, that the great awakening, when people are going, hey, wait a minute. I have been struggling. Things are getting worse. My kids are going to have less of an opportunity than I had. It's time to do something. And I look in Wisconsin, where the governor there, Scott Walker, evidently he wants a website, and he has put up a website, reforms.wi.gov, to show you all the wonderful work that his administration has done, at the expense of the taxpayer, of course. Now, the website claims that local governments have savings, $450 million just because of him. His wonderful leadership and the rest of his clan that ran through legislation stealing collective bargaining rights away, that they've saved. And I love that, saved $450 million. What they've done is they've stolen that $450 million from those workers. That's what they've done. There's no savings there. In fact, they pulled that out of the economy. So I like what the Democratic Party chair said there in Wisconsin, the chairman, Mike Tate. He said Scott Walker is well-versed in using taxpayer money to promote his political career, and campaign website that he launched today is a laughable example of what happens when politicians panic in the face of accountability. So when you're looking around, you're seeing there are no jobs, you're seeing the fact that we're laying more people off, there's more unemployment, fewer services, and people are looking around going, hey, wait a minute, where's my tax dollar going? Oh yeah, going to big corporations, that's where it's going. People want to hold somebody accountable. And look, the Democrats need to collect 540,206 signatures in a 60-day period to recall this guy, and I think it's going to happen. Because you're seeing the folks, United Wisconsin, and you're seeing the Democrats, and you're seeing labor people out there saying, you know what, enough already. We're going to get rid of this guy, as we should. Let's talk about a really, really important issue. Since evidently jobs not that important to the Republican Party, not that important, let's talk about something really important. How do we change Jewish women who go to an abortion clinic? How do we get them to convert to Christianity? Any answers? Well, I guess you do like the folks in North Carolina are doing. Because they're saying that, you know, you had some people go to these quote-unquote crisis pregnancy centers, which I guess, you know, in the state of North Carolina, misleading women about their options. And saying, you know what, hey, you know, if you convert to Christianity, you won't have to worry about it. Things will be wonderful. In fact, in one meeting that they had, you got to love this, volunteers prayed for this investigator who went into this clinic and was recommended that she become a born-again virgin. All she has to do is, you know, flip over, become Christian. This is what happens when theocrats take over what should be public health. I mean, it's really disturbing. And you had these people, because if James O'Keefe can do it and the radical right can go in and chop up stuff, these folks can go in and say, look, you know, I want to go through this. And like I said, the one, you know, pregnant Jewish woman was told by five of these so-called, you got to love the name, crisis pregnancy centers. That just sounds so nice. But she was told at five of them that she would not go to heaven unless she converted to Christianity. And that, you know, she could become one of these born-again virgins. And I'm going, really? That's something new to me. And look, you may not be in favor of abortion. Personally, I am not either. But that is a choice between a woman and her doctor. I am not pro-abortion. I am pro-safety. I want if my daughter ever got into trouble, I want to make sure that she has the option to be safe. But here's the problem. We're at a point right now. We're on the cusp of passing 7 billion people on this planet. And this planet is now becoming more unequal than it has ever become. Where a handful of the globally wealthy control the vast majority of the wealth, not just here in the United States, not just in places like Singapore or Portugal, but across this globe. And the question then becomes is, how do we, and I know the anti-abortion people, the pro-lifers, except for death penalties and electrocuting people and war and bombs, they want people to keep procreating. You know, you've got, you know, these good God-fearing people saying, yeah, let's have 20 kids. How do we feed them? How do we take care of them? How do we have a planet that's sustainable for everybody? And I look at this, 7 billion people. We have added almost 4.5 billion people to the world's population in the last 60 years. Just in the last 60 years. So the question then becomes, what do we do? I mean, if we're, you know, they love to say, well, you know, we would have another 20, 30, 50 million more people if we didn't have abortion. What would you do with those people? Just a quick question. I mean, we're not willing to take care of the people that we have now. And we're supposed to be this grand Christian nation. I'm just not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it. Look at what's going on in Oakland right now. This is just wrong. And these are people who have come out because, you know what? They've worked hard. They've played by the rules. They've done what they were supposed to do. Virtually every person I've talked to went to college. They're looking for a job. They want to work. I've yet to meet anybody who says, you know what, I don't want to work. I don't want to make my life better. I like sitting here. I like not taking a shower. I'm all in favor of it. In fact, we should have more people just sitting here on the steps doing nothing. I've yet to find that. What I've found is people who say, you know what, we need to make this country better so I have opportunity. And there's some radical self-interest in this, in my opinion. How do we make sure the next generation does better? Understand, the way we solve our problems, be it Social Security, be it Medicare, be it the national debt, is by having a growing economy. Everything the Republicans have done thus far, be it here with Tom Corbett, be it in Ohio with Kasich or Walker or Rick Scott in Florida or Snyder in Michigan, is all contraction. All pulling back, all pulling money out of the economy, all things meant to slow the recovery down. Because it's not about the economy. It's not about the citizens. It's about getting that black guy out of the White House. It's about changing the president and putting in their guy, be it black or white. You know, maybe Herman Cain is the guy. Maybe the 999 plan is what we're going to go to. I doubt it, but maybe. But that's what it's about. I mean, right from the beginning, the guy had barely taken his hand off the Bible, and you have Limbaugh saying, I hope he fails. You've got the entire Republican establishment working diligently to make sure that he fails. How many Republicans voted for the stimulus? How many Republicans voted for the health care bill? How many Republicans voted to turn anything around? What we got was more of the same crap that got us into the mess we're in the first place. Oh, we need more free market solutions. How many more? We need to give Wall Street more money. We need to give the billionaires more money because they know what to do with it. Yeah, they do. Screw us with it. Which is what they have done. And I look at the coalition that, you know, that the steel workers and the unions in the steel industry and some of the corporations are looking, hey, you know what? For our mutual survival, for the fact that maybe we can stick around, maybe we can start creating jobs here in Pennsylvania. They've set up this lobbying arm. They've set up this group. You know, look, they're going to be lobbying for steel with the under the auspices of saying, look, you know, those workers are going to be unionized. They're going to pay a decent living. What would a steel mill in Pittsburgh or in Harrisburg mean to the local economy? What would building something here mean to the local economy? Well, it would mean more money into the economy. It would mean a spiraling up. You'd have people with money in their pockets. Instead of saying, hey, how do we kick those state workers out of jobs? How do we steal wages from those teachers and those cops? How do we take money from those firemen? How do we steal back their pensions? Instead of saying, hey, how do we make sure that we can retire with some income security? We're talking about how to steal from them. It's just nuts. But sadly, our Republican friends don't get it. It's about creating industry here that's sustaining. And the solar thing is a perfect example. They are literally dancing in the streets over the Solyndra thing. The fact that one of these companies went down and now they can go, oh, we can crucify it. Because see, that one went down. Don't talk about the ones that have succeeded. Don't talk about the ones that are doing very well. No, I don't want to focus on that. And really don't focus on our major problems, which is getting off of the oil, getting away from foreign oil, which I think everybody agrees on. Everybody, whether you're a T-twit or not, whether you're an Occupy person or not, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I think we all agree, get off the oil, be foreign oil. And had we followed the Carter plan, and look, I got a lot of problems with Carter, the whole deregulation movement. But he was right on getting off the oil, off the foreign oil. He was right on the solar energy banks. He was right on wind power. And I fear 2012 is going to be 1980 all over again, and all of those advancements, all of that movement forward will be crushed by some idiot like Rick Perry or somebody who maybe won't be able to decide like Mitt Romney. Or heaven forbid, maybe we'll get a slogan out of Herman Cain. 1-888-520-RICK. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Ken Baznett from Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. That'll find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and across the nation. Our good friend Ken Baznett, Talk Radio News Service. Ken, thanks for taking time for me.
How are you, my friend?
I am good. Long time since the last time we talked.
Yeah, I've been a busy little boy. I think it's been about 2 weeks. It's just that I have this natural personality that it seems like it's been a month because you miss me so much.
Is that what it is?
That's the way I'm spinning it.
I love people who think highly of themselves. Good for you. Good for you.
Well, I have a lot of high friends in places. I have a lot of high, you know what I'm trying to say.
I hear you. So what's going on? I mean, all day today I've been thinking about Rick Perry. What is wrong with this guy? And is anybody giving him any more money? Because I think he's now officially done.
Well, you know, you just, you know, it's interesting. You are a wise man, as always, because the essence of your question really strikes at the foundation of where we're at here. Let's begin with how he began his morning. And that was with an interview that aired on CNBC, in which my colleague John Harwood, CNBC's brilliant Washington correspondent and a longtime New York Times correspondent, actually gave Rick Perry the opportunity to move away from the birther comments, which were published over the weekend.
Threw him the beach ball. Magazine. Threw him the beach ball to hit out of the park, and what'd he do?
And lo and behold, what he basically said was, no, I think this is a good issue to bring up.
Yes, double down.
Exactly. And he went so far as to say, and I'm basically quoting him here, you know, basically saying, and I like to poke fun at him, meaning the President of the United States.
Yeah, that's a good message to take to the American people. Let's ridicule
the American people, but it's really a dumb message to take to the American people on a day where all you really want them talking about is your new tax plan.
Which is insane.
which he ruled out today.
Which is insane. I mean, this tax plan just, I mean, I get the whole Herman Cain thing, the advertising, the marketing that goes into the 999. And you, we could argue that since the 999 thing, he's been stepping all over it and twisting it around. And it's really more complicated than that. But this thing that Perry came out with, trying to be simplistic for the simpletons, basically, I guess optional. I guess maybe the optional people would never be that.
And therein really lies the spit your donut out in the morning with your coffee as you're reading the story.
Yep.
What is an optional 20% flat tax? If the flat tax is the way you're going to go, then make that the program.
Yep.
But the man obviously knows that he has to try and be all things to all people. And so what he has proposed, lo and behold, is this optional 20% flat tax. You as a taxpayer have the option to pay 20% of your income, assets, etc., or revert back to the current graduated system that we now have,
yeah,
which basically says, hey, working class people and middle class people, you're still going to have to fill out the long form, but my rich friends who are bankrolling this little expeditionary force that I call a campaign, they're going to just do the 20% flat tax, and we're going to leave them alone.
Exactly.
And that's basically what it comes down to. It was a mixed message day to begin with, even if you just talk about the taxes, but to add in the fact that he continues to move towards this birther stuff, I think really defines the day as, you know, this man is basically juggling with no hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are educated people, you know, and we fashion, you and I and the majority of your listeners, my readers, fashion ourselves to be politically astute people. So one has to ask themselves, why is this happening? Why is this man who was cast as a Republican messiah who is going to save the party from Mitt Romney, why is he imploding, and why is he behaving this way? I think as the day went on today, we saw the answer to that.
Yeah.
And it came in the form of a New York Times CBS poll that now shows Rick Perry at 6% in the GOP race.
He's down there with Michelle
Bachmann.
He's down there with Bachmann.
He is now officially a bottom-tier candidate, no question about it.
So he may be doing one of these gimmicky Lincoln Douglas debates with Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich.
He's going to have to try and do every P.T. Barnum-esque thing in the book, you know. Now there is one wild card, and you hinted at that in that very astute question that you asked, and that is how many more people are going to give him money. Well, it might not matter because he's got $15 million in the bank. So the big question that remains here is, can he buy love?
Yeah.
Can money buy love? Because, yeah. I mean, let me just give it to you, empirically here, okay? On September 16th, in this very same New York Times CBS poll, Rick Perry was at 23% and sitting atop the heap. On October 3rd, he was at 12%, and as we're reporting tonight, he's now at 6%. It becomes very clear that, you know, this man is just in a tailspin that is perhaps even worse than Michelle Bachmann's in terms of, you know, the swiftness of it.
I mean, you know, the media-wise, they built him up. They built this guy up as the, he's going to be the messiah of the Republican Party.
Hey,
and here's the thing, he opened his mouth.
Yeah.
The second, or when he was on Cavuto tonight, he didn't say anything, so there's another thing. But the guy has no real personality. I mean, he's got the personality of a rock.
He believed his hype. I do not think that he is lying when he says that my wife talked me into this. And, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, that's why I was so concerned about Elizabeth Warren up in Massachusetts, because you have to want it.
Yeah.
That fire in the belly may be an overused, trite expression, but it's true. You have to want these things when it comes to elections. And, you know, it really just boggles the mind, you know, to see how this thing is going. By the way, while we're on the, on the numbers, on, speaking of meteoric rises or falls, On September 16th, Herman Cain was at 5%. On October 3rd, he was at 17%,
yep.
And he now sits atop the lot at 25%.
I love the Herman Cain train. Did you see the video that's making the rounds? We talked about it last night.
You mean his ad?
What's that?
You mean the new ad,
yeah.
with the campaign manager smoking at the end?
Yeah, because nothing says freedom like blowing smoke in someone's face.
Right, right. It is a... listen, I was on the phone today with just about as high as you can go in the Obama campaign. A great source who I deal with quite a bit, and we finally just had the candid, you know, deep background conversation, and they only believe that there are only two real people, real candidates for president here, not left, but people who are really only running for president,
right?
And that's Mitt Romney and Rick Perry. The rest of them, they just feel like Newt Gingrich is trying to keep his Newt Incorporated website
absolutely
fired up.
Needs the
okay?
money.
Ron Paul is a believer, okay, and you know he might be he might be a little bit more of an outlier than the rest of them in terms of, you know, he probably does believe he's running for president, but probably has trouble fathoming the fact that he can't break out beyond his base.
Right.
Even though, arguably, he is a father, if you will, of the Tea Party movement, okay? Michelle Bachmann is just...
she's just nuts.
I think she has just spent too many times, you know, laying out in the sun on Saturn's rings, and has really finally gotten to her, and she has no clue.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
I'll
that
go
she
with you
is,
there.
You know, yeah, and that's it. I'm not going to tell a Pennsylvania guy about Santorum because you can tell me about Santorum.
Yeah, leave the frothy one out of this.
You know what I mean? Huntsman, I believe, and they believe, you know, in the campaign, is running for vice president, but only if, you know, one of the wing nuts were to be the nominee.
Right.
Because Romney Huntsman doesn't work to excite the hard right. That's for sure, you know.
Yeah.
And that'll be a, you know, therein lies the whole, and Herman Cain, same deal. Listen, you and I both know, your listeners know, primaries and caucuses are ground games. This air war stuff is really exciting. The debates have become one of the, you know, certainly one of my favorite reality TV shows to watch, no question
good
about
stuff.
It. But you win caucuses in particular, and a primary in New Hampshire as well, with a ground game, with a field organization, with an army on the